All right, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study, and I'm glad to be here today in the land of the living. Some of you know that I was a little under the weather earlier in the week. I'm probably a good 90% back to normal, a little bit of congestion, so I appreciate the prayers. Thanks for joining us this morning. I did want to say a special thank you. I get quite a bit of correspondence during the week, and over the past couple of weeks, I've had several people reach out to me with ideas and insights about the current study that we're on. I've often pointed out that I am very blessed in that this isn't really a beginner's class, so I'm teaching people, or I'm sharing a message with people who in many cases have spent most of their life studying this material. So I get all sorts of interesting emails and Facebook messages that say things like, have you considered this? What about this verse? So Ross Bearden called me the other day. We had a nice conversation about some of his insights. I got a really nice letter from Barry Miller, who also sent me some insights on the tribe. So, you know, please feel free not only to send me things that you might see in regards to the present study, because I value your input, and quite often it opens my eyes to something that I might not have noticed before. So we can all be taught, and I appreciate the fact that there are plenty of teachers out there who are willing to share. So thank you, Ross, and thank you, Barry Miller, for your comments that you sent me. I would like to work through today, among other things, some genealogies. Is that okay? So I took the map down just for a week because I don't really need it today. And although it's beautiful, I thought, you know, let's pull it down. Let's kind of change things up a little bit. I'll be using the dry erase board today because I want to demonstrate and illustrate a little bit of the genealogies, because we're going to go back again. We're going to go back into the foundational documents of the Torah, and the earliest chapters are in the book of Genesis anyway. And we're going to work through some birthings, you know, the origins of the people of Israel. We're going to talk about the births, and we're going to bring in some Torah and some prophets, and we're going to weave that all together. We're going to talk about the past. We're going to talk about the future. Really, what we're studying is, as I've pointed out, the single most important subject in all of biblical studies, the tribes. We're talking about that special family, if you will, the seed of Abraham through Isaac and Jacob, through whom Jehovah intends to reveal his way to humanity. So think about that. Of all the people, you know, all the people are mine, says Jehovah. But it's through a very select group that he, Jehovah, has chosen to reveal his way for all the nations of the world, all the families of the earth, if you will. This particular family is chosen and blessed, but for a reason, to bring about blessing to all the families of the earth. The prophet Amos is told, or Amos speaking for Jehovah says, of Israel, you only have I known of all the families of the earth. You only. Now think about that. So how do we go from a special family? You know, as Tabor puts it, the Bible, essentially, from Genesis 12 on, is in some ways the story of one man's family. So how do we go from you only have I known of all the families of the earth to passages like this? Go to Psalm 22. Psalm 22. Psalm 22 and beginning in verse 28. All the ends of the world shall remember and turn to Jehovah, and all the families of the nations shall worship before you. For the kingdom is Jehovah's, and he is ruler over the nations. So how do we go from, this is the biblical question, how do we go from you only have I known of all the families of the earth to a place where all the families of the earth turn to Jehovah? Something happens in there, and I believe that that something is that the group which is chosen to do a task does that task. We're going to be talking about that. What about this? Another thought that I have, Israel is told in Deuteronomy 6, what has come to be known as the central confession of the faith among Jews. And those who are Torah-oriented also lay claim to this. Shema Yisrael, Yehovah Eloheinu, Yehovah Echad. Hear, O Israel, Jehovah our God, Jehovah is one. That central confession of the oneness of the Creator, Jehovah alone, we have that is a known and stated part of the faith. But in Micah chapter 4, it says, they will walk in the name of their God, but we will walk in the name. In other words, the nations, excuse me, the nations of the world will walk about in the name of their God. But the people, the specially chosen cadre of priests, if you will proclaim the name of the one God forever and always. And ultimately, we come to the place, such as Zechariah chapter 14, 9, which depicts nations of the world sending delegates to Jerusalem to worship Jehovah the King at Sukkot. And it says that those nations which don't send delegates won't get rain. So when you read Zechariah 14, 9, it says, and in that day, Jehovah will be king over all the earth. He will be one, and his name one. So how do we get there? Ultimately, what we're talking about is the plan of God for the ages. The plan of the Creator for the restoration of humanity. I mean, it's that big of a deal. So we're talking about the plan of God. That is, how will ever the knowledge of God cover the earth as the waters cover the sea? We talk about Jehovah being king over all the earth. He will be one in his name, one. We talk about the various passages where Jehovah is proclaimed as king over all the world. What we're talking about is a manifestation of nothing less than the kingdom of Jehovah manifested on earth. As Tabor puts it, salvation is to be worked out in the rugged arena of human history. Over the course of time, through a specific people, God will bring about this plan that ultimately puts forth the ideal of justice and righteousness in the earth, the way of Jehovah. This great task was assigned to a specific people, a physical people, a real people. We're not talking about spiritualizing anything. We're not talking about allegorically. We're talking a specific people was chosen by God, called to be holy. Be ye therefore holy, as King James so eloquently put it, and ne'er a translation has said it better. Be ye therefore holy, for I am holy, saith Jehovah. It's a hard task. It's assigned, it's commanded, it's charged to a people who were also known as a segula, a special treasure, a a priestly nation. What do priests do? Malachi says that the lips of the priest shall keep knowledge. So a nation, which is called to be holy, said to be God's special treasure, specially chosen from among all the peoples of the earth, have been given a task, have been given the position of a priestly nation, a covenant of the people, a light unto the goyim. As if this were not enough, as if these descriptions, as if these challenges were not enough to place on a singular people, this also was placed upon the descendants of one man and his woman, a man by the name of Abraham and Sarah. They're told the single family, we're told in Isaiah 51 in verses 1 and 2, you that chase righteousness, you who seek Jehovah, look to Abraham, look to Sarah. He was one when I called him, but he made him many. The idea to look to Abraham and Sarah, this particular group, the seed of Abraham, is also called the Son of God. Now, I've taught on this many occasions, but I want to kind of enter into the idea that I want to present today by stating very clearly that biblically, from the Hebrew Bible standpoint, the people descended from Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob are referred to as the Son of God. I'll give you a couple of examples. Exodus chapter 4. In Exodus chapter 4, clearly, Israel is called the Son of God. In Deuteronomy chapter 14, same thing. Israel is referred to as the children of Jehovah. Jeremiah chapter 31, in three places, Israel or Ephraim is referred to as God's son. In Hosea chapter 11, Israel is referred to as the child of God, which he literally picks up and nuzzles the cheek, teaching him how to walk. The image is very clear. In Psalm 82, and perhaps in Psalm 2, if we incorporate the coronation hymns and the Psalms, and there are other passages too. So when we get right down to it, what we are talking about when we study the story of the tribes, when we study the message of the tribes, the Bible tells the story of how God will save the world through His Son. Some of you are saying, am I on the right channel? Absolutely. I'm talking about what the Hebrew Bible says. What I'm talking about is a message of good news that God loved the world so much that He takes this special group and puts them in a position, charges them with a mission, a task that ultimately involves the salvation of the world. This particular child of God, as you'll see, is born miraculously. So we have all the makings in the Hebrew Bible for quite a story. As I've heard it put, the greatest story never told. Now we're going to look at today something a little bit differently. I've told Dave that I'm going to be using my board, so we're going to start, we're going to talk about, I'm going to move over to my board, and I'm going to set this up. Now, hopefully, you'll be able to see this. Let me get some things set up here, because I want to map out for you on the board the Holy Family that leads to the story and the study of the tribes. So we know that we begin with Abraham. So if you can work with me here on my genealogy chart. Now, I also know that quite a few people download the audio. I want to visually represent this on the board today so you can work with me. You can draw this out. It's not too difficult to follow in the audio. I've already thought this through. So Abraham is the first one. Abraham is called. Genesis chapter 11, we meet him. Genesis chapter 12, Lech Lecha, walk for yourself and go to the place that I will show you. Abraham is the beginning. It begins with one man's family. Remember, Joshua chapter 24, he comes from the other side of the Euphrates. He is there. He's from the other side, and he is therefore referred to as Ha'ivri, the Hebrew. So Abraham is the father of the people which ultimately are called the Son of God. Now, I want to tell you that my chart, apologies to the ladies, I'm not leaving the women off because I don't think women are important. I'm just showing the male genealogy here in today's chart. I want to show you the passing son to son. And I'm only focusing on those through which this promise passes. In other words, we know that Abraham, through Hagar, has other sons. And through Keturah, it's not a slighting of those peoples. For we know from biblical literature that they, too, have a purpose. They, too, have a calling. But what I'm focusing on today is a particular calling, a particular mission, and it leads through Isaac and not Ishmael. You okay with that? And then when we come down from Isaac, we come to Jacob. Jacob. Now, again, not to slight Esau. Esau plays into our story as well. I'm dropping my name tags here. I don't want to lose this. We're not talking about Esau. We're talking about Jacob, whose name is later changed to Israel, and we'll get into that as well. Now, the way that this is going to make sense is Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, none of these are Jews, right? In fact, you could say none of them are Israelites, right? That fair enough? Abraham is called a Hebrew, and if we're right when we say that a Hebrew is one who crosses over, Abraham's first called a Hebrew, Genesis chapter 14, we could say that Isaac, too, is a Hebrew. We can say that Jacob in Israel, or Israel, is also called a Hebrew. Now, I'm going to just because I want to focus on Israel today, we know that Abraham and Isaac are the fathers. I'm going to begin our genealogical study with Jacob. And Jacob goes to Padan Aram. He's going to get a woman for himself, and he sees a girl by the name of Rachel. He really wants Rachel. You remember the story. So I'm going to put Rachel as one of the mothers. Now here, see, I'm going to involve the women. I'm going to show the matriarchs of this family. So he really wants Rachel. But his father-in-law, Laban, pulls a fast one on him. Remember the story. And he ends up with Leah. Now this, all of these stories come in, we're going to be focusing in a few minutes on Genesis chapter 29 through Genesis chapter 35. So, now I want to read in Genesis 29, verse 31. Genesis 29, verse 31. Let's see if I can do this with my hands full. And when Jehovah saw that Leah was hated, he opened her womb, but Rachel was barren. So here we have the story as it unfolds. Jacob truly loves Rachel. She's the favored one. Leah, when God sees that she's not loved with the same degree that Rachel is, he opens her womb, and she begins to have children. I want to show you the Israelites, if you will, in the order of their birth, according to their mothers, because this will all come into play as we track the tribes. So we're having to go back. This is the point I want to make today. We're having to go back into the history to study the birth order and so forth. All of this is going to play in. So I'm going to put forth, I'm going to show you the children of Leah according to the narrative. I'm going to read the text to you, and we'll see what this looks like as it plays out. Okay. Now in Genesis chapter 29, beginning in verse 32. Genesis 29, verse 32. And Leah conceived and bore a son. And she called his name Reuben, for she said, surely Jehovah has looked upon my affliction. Now, therefore, my husband will love me. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, because Jehovah has heard that I was hated, he has therefore given me this son also. And she called his name Shimon. She conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will be joined to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore, his name was called Levi. And then she conceived again, bore a son, and said, now will I praise Jehovah. And therefore, she called his name Yehuda, and she left off bearing. So, Leah and Rachel, the two women, Rachel is barren. God opens Leah's womb, and she has four sons, Reuben, Simeon, or Shimon, Levi, and Judah. All of these are descendants of Jacob through Leah. Now, but Rachel is barren. So she, in other words, Leah already has four, Rachel has none. I'm going to pick it up in verse 1 of chapter 30. And when Rachel saw that she bore Jacob no children, Rachel envied her sister. And she said, give me children or else I die. And Jacob's anger burned against Rachel, and he said, am I in the place of God who has withheld from you the fruit of the womb? She said, behold, my maid Bilhah, go into her, and she shall bear upon my knees, that I may also have children by her. And she gave him Bilhah, her handmaid, to wife, and Jacob went into her. So now we have Rachel's handmaid, Bilhah. So she can't have children. She says, take my handmaid, and I'll have children through her. So Jacob goes into her. Bilhah conceives, and what does it say? And Bilhah conceived and bore Jacob a son, and Rachel said, God has judged me, has also heard my voice, has given me a son, therefore called she his name Dan. Okay, I just want you to see how this unfolds. Jacob now has five children, five sons, four through Leah. Rachel still has none. Bilhah, her handmaiden, brings forth Dan. Now, I know that there are various, you know, and people study the tribes, there are various which tribes are good, and, you know, sometimes Dan gets a bad rap, and I don't want us to do that yet. I don't want us to make any assumptions about these tribes yet. All right, now, look at verse 5 through 8. So let's see. Verse 7. Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid, conceived again and bore Jacob a second son. And Rachel said, "With great wrestlings have I wrestled with my sister, and I've prevailed." And she called his name Naphtali. So now we have Is that showing up okay for everybody, Dave? Jacob, through Leah, has the four sons. Rachel can't have any, so she has pulled Bilhah in and starts to have children for Jacob through her handmaid. Now, Leah, she realizes, according to the text, that she's not having any more children at the time. So what happens is she brings a little to the mix as well. So in verse 9 of chapter 30, when Leah saw that she had stopped bearing, she took Zilpah, her maid, and gave her to Jacob to wife. So now she brings in two can play this game. She brings in her handmaid. And the handmaid also gets pregnant. So look at verse 10. And Zilpah, Leah's handmaid, bore Yaakov a son, and Leah said, "Fortune comes," and she called his name Gad. And Zilpah, Leah's maid, bore Yaakov a second son, and Leah said, "Happy am I, for the daughters will call me blessed," and she called his name Asher. All right. What? Somebody say something? Okay. So we have Gad and Asher. I just want you to see how this is working out. Leah, four sons. Rachel can't have any. She brings Bilhah, her maid, handmaid, in. Two sons, Dan and Naphtali. Leah can't bear. She realizes she's not having children anymore. She brings her handmaid in. She, Zilpah, has Gad and Asher. All right, now, where are we now? Leah, once again, her womb is opened. So we're going to pick up in verse 18. Now, you remember between where I left off and where I'm picking up now, there's a story of the mandrakes. There are a lot of stories that we're going to go through because I just want to focus on the birth of the Holy Family, the order, who the mothers are, why that's even significant. You know, a lot of people will look at charts in their Bible and they'll see the placement of the tribes, you know, around the camp and so forth. This is important. So we're going to talk about this, but I want you to kind of get the background to it. So we're going to skip over the story of the mandrakes. Long story short, she earns the right to sleep with the husband, to sleep with Jacob. And in verse 18, Leah said, "God has given me my hire because I have given my maiden to my husband," and she called his name Issachar. All right, verse 17, God had hearkened to Leah, and she conceived and bore Jacob a fifth son. So we got Issachar, and Leah conceived again and bore Yaakov a sixth son. And Leah said, God has endowed me with a good dowry. Now will my husband dwell with me because I've borne him six sons. And she called his name Zebulon. All right, so now we've got Issachar and Zebulon also to Leah. Issachar, Zebulun, now I want you to get a visual of this. Everyone's having children except Rachel. You can read it, but the visualization of it is going to make a point here. This takes years, and Rachel feels forgotten. Now also, Leah has a daughter by the name of Dinah. And we're not going to talk about Dinah so much in this class, but I don't want to leave her out. She plays an important role. In fact, it's very important when we get into the stories that come forth later. But just for the time being, Leah has six sons that she brings forth to Jacob. The two handmaids each have two. Rachel has not yet born a child. So, now, look at Genesis 30 and verse 22. And God remembered Rachel, and God hearkened to her and opened her womb. She conceived and bore a son and said, God has taken away my reproach. And she called his name Joseph, and said, Jehovah shall add to me another son. And it came to pass when Rachel had borne Joseph that Yaakov said to Laban, send me away. So let me tell you something. We've got a miraculous birth again in the story because Rachel is barren and she calls to God and God hearkens and opens her womb. And she gives birth to Joseph. So now all of the women have brought forth children. Jacob, now by the way, one point I'd like to bring up is where it says, and God remembered Rachel, Genesis chapter 30, verse 22. Rachel is one of three people that phrase is used concerning. The first is Noah in Genesis chapter 8. And God remembered Noah. In Genesis chapter 19, and God remembered Abraham. And in Genesis chapter 30 and verse 22, God remembered Rachel. And through Rachel, we're going to be really talking about this boy of hers, Joseph. Joseph is going to be a central part of the story. Very important as things unfold. Now, I'm going to leave the board. We'll come back to it in a moment because I want to focus on the text for a little while. You'll get that picture. You'll be able to keep it in your mind. But I want to start now. I want to work through the text a little bit. At this point, we only have 11 of the 12 sons. The 12th has not been born yet. They're still in Paddan Aram. Jacob asked permission to leave. They ultimately end up fleeing. You remember the story. And Rachel takes her father's idols. And all of those are important stories. But as they prepare to enter the land, they're going back in. There's a story in Genesis 32 that I want to pick up on because it relates to the tribes. Now, when you get to Genesis 32, in verse 1, now, just to kind of catch you up on the context, Laban does catch up with Jacob. He expresses his being upset for them leaving in the middle of the night. Remember the story? And so they make peace, they make a treaty, they make a covenant. And then ultimately what happens is Laban then moves forward. And so we pick up in chapter 32, Genesis 32 and verse 1. And Jacob went on his way, and the angels of God met him, or the messengers of God met him. Malachim. And when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is God's camp." And he called the name of that place Mahanaim. Mahanaim. And Jacob is very fearful. I want to make a connection here in a moment to the departure and the return of Jacob. Both are associated with the appearance of Malachim, messengers, angels. Now, it's also in the same place, by the way. But when Jacob is coming back, remember when he left in Genesis 28, he was leaving under the threat of his brother to do him harm, to kill him. So as he comes back, he's fearful that that is still existing, that his brother still wants him dead. So look down at verse 8. In verse 8, Yaakov was greatly afraid and distressed and divided the people that were with him, the flocks and the herds and the camels, into two camps. And what he does is he thinks, you know, if Esau's still mad and he comes in and strikes the one camp, the other will survive. It won't be a total loss. Can you imagine? You have to take your family and divide your family into two camps in the hope that some might survive. This is how he's thinking. All right. And Jacob said, now this is what I want you to do, is I want you to listen to the words of a prayer of Jacob. This is what he prays. Jacob said, "O God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, Jehovah who said to me, 'Return to your country and to your kindred, and I will deal well with you,' I'm unworthy of the least of these mercies and of all the truth which you've shown your servant. With my staff, I passed over this Jordan, and now I've become two camps." Now, sometime back, early in the study, I talked about the prophetic significance of this, because I believe, and I'll show this, that the history and the prophecy work together to tell the story. The historical story points to the prophetic story. The prophetic story looks back on the historical story. So just as the children of Israel are preparing to come back in the land, prophetically, we get a picture that they are in two camps, Mahanaim. Remember, I quoted last time when I taught this from the Song of Songs. The Song of Songs, it's a love story between God and his bride. What would you see when you see the restored one? As it were, a dance of the two camps. So we have Jacob saying, "I left here, it was just me and my stick. And now I come back. Because of your bounty, I'm divided into two camps." Now, he takes his group and he divides them. All that night, Jacob fights with what is called a man. And we're going to read this. Go to chapter 32, verse 27. After an all-night fight, and he said, "I will not let thee go unless you bless me." And he said to him, "What is your name?" And he said, "Yaakov," Jacob. He said, "Your name shall no more be called Jacob, but Israel, for you've contended or struggled with God and with men and have prevailed." this wrestling match ends up in name change, let's call it name change number one. There's a story here in Genesis 32, verse 27 through 29, and there's a story in Genesis 35 about the name change. But the name is changed by God from Jacob to Israel. Now, I'm going to go back to the board after I read this. Excuse me. We're going to begin in Genesis 33. And Jacob lifted up his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau came, and with him 400 men. Remember, he's scared that Esau wants to kill him. And he divided the children to Leah and to Rachel and to the two handmaids. He put the two handmaids and their children foremost, Leah and her children after, and Rachel and Joseph last of all. Okay, what does that look like? All right, Dave. So he's going to take the children and divide them in such a way. Let's see. He puts the handmaids and their children first. All right, so work with me here. Handmaids and their children first. I'm going to move this to this side, just so you get a picture of how this is going. Think there's any favoritism going on here? Is there a reason that he's doing in this order? Think about it. Who are you going to protect? Now I'm going to try to show you what this procession looks like, just so you get an idea of how he's protecting and who it is that he's protecting. These little magnets are hard to deal with, can I tell you? Judah, Issachar, Zebulun, and then last of all, Rachel and Joseph. Can't even hardly get Joseph on my board. This is the order that he sets them up because he knows that danger is possible. Joseph is the last one. We're going to be talking a lot about Joseph. We're going to be talking about the reason why Joseph is in that position. So everybody get this image. I hope it helps, because we can read over this and you just don't see it. Danger is imminent. This is the order. Okay, Dave, thanks there for bringing me over. We'll be going back and forth. When we get to Genesis 35, now, again, I told you earlier I'm skipping the story about Dina, but only for today because I want to make some other points. In Genesis 35, God comes to Jacob and tells him, "Arise, go to Bethel and dwell there and make an altar to God who appeared to you when you did flee from the face of Esau, your brother." So they're going back into the land. He tells him, go now. Now that you're back, I want you to go back to that place. What place? That place, Beit El, where you made the altar. All right. Now, I want to read verses 2 through 4. Jacob said to his household and all that were with him, I'll just tell you the story. He says, okay, we're back. Take all those strange gods and get rid of them. Now, I believe this has a prophetic significance as well. I think that just as it happened historically, that ultimately the returning descendants of Israel will also put away their idols at a certain stage. Right now, I think they still have idols hidden in their bags. People are being very tricky to conceal them. But ultimately, the idols will be put away. Now, I want you to go down to verse 9. And Jacob, God appeared to Jacob again when he came out of Paddan Aram and blessed him. And God said to him, your name, Jacob, your name shall not be called anymore Jacob, but Israel shall be your name. And he called his name Israel. And God said to him, I am God Almighty, be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall come from you. Kings shall come out of your loins. And the land which I gave to Abraham and Isaac, to you I will give it. And to your seed after you I will give the land. And God went up from there, from him and the place where he talked to him. And Jacob set a pillar in that place where he talked to him, a pillar of stone, poured a drink offering on it, and he poured oil upon it. And Jacob called the name of the place where God had spoken with him, Beit El. Very important story, very important place. I know some of our friends are currently, there's a lot of discussion going on various lists with people discussing the importance of these ancient cultic sites versus Jerusalem and so forth. We can get into that in a later class. For the present, just know that anciently, patriarchal narratives, very important place. All right? But this particular story brings us back to the story in Genesis 28. If you go back to Genesis 28, when Jacob flees, when he flees Esau, this is from Torah portion Vayetze, Genesis chapter 28, verse 10. You'll recall that Jacob leaves from Beersheba. He's headed towards Haran. On his way, he lights in a certain place because the sun is setting. He goes to sleep, sets up a stone, sleeps on it, has a dream. And in the dream, he sees what in Hebrew is called a sulam, an ascent, a ladder, it's often translated. And there are messengers ascending and descending with Jehovah at the top. Very interesting dream. He wakes up. But first of all, in the dream, he's told this. I am Jehovah, God of Abraham, your father, God of Isaac. The land on which you lie, to you I will give it. And to your seed, and your seed shall be as the dust of the earth. You shall spread abroad to the west and to the east and to the north and to the south. And in you and in your seed shall all the families of the earth be blessed. I am with you, will keep you in all the places to which you go, and will bring you back to this land. For I will not leave you until I've done that which I've spoken to you of. Jacob wakes up. He says, surely God is in this place. Now, meanwhile, people are real interested and should be in the place, but it's the word which is spoken in that place which people miss the details of. It tells Jacob, your descendants will spread abroad. He doesn't say descendants, actually, does he? You will spread abroad. Let's see if it says seed. I want to make sure. Let's see. I'll give it to you. Your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall spread abroad. So Jacob is to spread abroad to all the four compass points. But God says, I'm going to be with you. I'm going to bring you back. And he's looking forward to the tribes, the message of the tribes. We're going to talk about the dispersion of the tribes as part of our goal of the study. Now, the reason it's important to look at these words in the historical, but also to consider the prophetic, go with me to Hosea chapter 12. Now, this might make more sense now in the context of where we're talking. Chapter 12 of Hosea, verse 1, Ephraim compasses me about with lies, the house of Israel with deceit, but Judah still rules with God. Hosea says, Ephraim, the house of Israel, has this deceit. Israel is still, Judah is still with God. Notice the distinction. Watch this. Is faithful with holy ones. Ephraim guards the wind and follows after the east wind. He daily increases lies and desolation. They make an alliance with Assyria. This stuff is talking about historical events. Remember last week, we worked through Isaiah chapter 6, 7, 8, 9, and we talked about how some of these prophecies tie in with historical realities. Carry oil is carried into Mitzrayim, into Egypt. Jehovah also has a controversy with Judah. Will punish Jacob according to his ways, according to his doings, will he recompense him? He took his brother by the heel in the womb. And by his strength, he strove with God. God? He strove with an angel, a messenger, and prevailed. He wept and made supplication to him. He would find him at Bethel, and there he would speak with us. Now, this is, Hosea's making reference to this ancient struggle and the narrative of the messenger wrestling with Jacob. And he says that there at Bethel, God spoke with us. Meaning that the historical account has something to say to us of relevance. You would expect it to say. In fact, some translations, because that sounds weird, they translate it, and there he spoke with him. But in the Hebrew and in any accurate English translation, it says there he spoke with us. Now I want you to go back to Genesis 35. Genesis 35. And I'm going to set my chart back up, Dave. So in Genesis chapter 35, what we have is the caravan moves again. All right, let me get this where I can, let me move all these. Got to be an easier way to do it. Yeah, is that what I need? Yeah, that might be it. Yeah, I figure something out. See, I'm trying to get all educational here and use my board, and it's a little bit harder to do. I'm making it look easy. You ought to see how hard this really is. See if I can slide these over. Look at that. Getting better at it, Dave. Rachel and Joseph. Maybe I'm not making it look easy. All right. So Genesis 35 picks up the story, and they're moving again. Sorry about the cough. Some of you didn't pray enough for me. Gotta be. And Leah's two latest boys. It's very important to keep track of where these children are, who these children are. So in Genesis 35, beginning in verse 16, and they journeyed from Bethel. Let's see how far I want to go with this. They journeyed from Bethel, and there was a little way to come to Ephrath. And Rachel travailed, and she had hard labor. It came to pass when she was in hard labor that the midwife said to her, "Fear not, you shall have this son also." And it came to pass, as her soul was departing, for she died, that she called his name Benoni, but his father called him Benjamin. Benjamin. And Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, which is Bethlehem. And Jacob set up a pillar at her grave. This is the pillar of Rachel's grave to this day. And Israel journeyed, pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder, Migdal Eder. All right, now, here is Rachel's son, Benjamin. And Rachel dies. So you can see the distribution of the sons of Israel according to the mothers. And this will play in. It's going to play in the arrangement of the tribes. It's even going to show forth in certain prophecies as we work through in our studies as we go forward. Now, this story about the birth of Benjamin takes place in what's called Beit Lechem Ephratah. This is a geographical location. It's a place. Bethlehem towards Ephrat. In Hebrew, if you want to say Ephrat is a place. Bethlehem's a place. Ephrat is a place. It's not a place called Bethlehem Ephratah. Ephrath is a place. If you want to say towards, you say Ephratah in Hebrew. So it's like if I'm writing Genesis 35, and I want to describe where this event takes place, I say, took place in Beit Lechem, you know, Ephratah, towards Ephrath. It's very specific, very locale. It's called the Hay locale. So we know where this happens. Now, in my mind, when I'm studying Scripture, I begin to make associations based upon words and association with words. If I think birth of a child, Beit Lechem, Ephratah, Migdal Eder, it automatically sends me to a passage in Micah. In Micah chapter 5. So I'm going to sit down for a minute and read. Micah chapter 5. I want you to go there with me. Micah chapter 5. I put this out because as we associate history and prophecy and tie things together, we'll come back to some of these points. Now look, I have people who listen in who send me very nice notes, and I also have people sometimes that send me not so nice notes, like, you're off on your theology because of this, this, and this. And a lot of these people really want me to get into all these messianic passages. Like one person wrote me and said, hey, you're leaving out who is the child, Bethlehem Ephratah. So let's look at that for a minute. Because I just told you, I associate textually, linguistically, word to word, Genesis 35 with Micah 5. Listen to this. But you, Beit Lechem Ephratah, same words, right? though you are little among the thousands of Judah, yet out of you shall come forth to me one that is to be ruler in Israel. His goings forth are from ancient times, from days of old. He will give them up until the time when she who travails has brought forth again. Then the remnant of his brothers shall return to the children of Israel. He shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of Jehovah, the majesty of the name of Jehovah his God, and they shall abide. Ki atah, because now he shall be great unto the ends of the earth, and this shall be peace. Asher shall come into our land, and when he shall tread in our palaces, then shall we raise against him 7 shepherds, 8 princes of men. They shall graze the land of Asher with the sword, the land of Nimrod with the keen blade. Thus shall he deliver us from Asher when he comes to our land, when he treads within our border. White space. A lot of people take Micah chapter 5 and verse 1 and 2, and they make it about a place. And they make it a messianic prophecy. A ruler from Bethlehem Ephratah. Right? Have you ever seen anybody do that? About 2.2 billion people in the world do it. So it's not new. So this particular passage isn't talking about a place. Now, the words are similar. I believe the stories are connected. But interestingly enough, and I'm going to get into a whole section on the Davidic ruler, because a lot of people can't wait. They're just chomping at the bit to get to the messianic passages. We're going to do that. But I want you to see right now that in Micah chapter 5, you, Beit Lechem Ephratah, Tzair Lichyot Ba'alfei Yehuda, you, Bethlehem, though you're small among, listen, the clans of Judah. Now, those 2.2 billion people that read this passage messianically as a place, they add something that the text doesn't have. They say the land of Judah. No mention of land here. This is talking about the clans. And by the way, when we get into this more, you'll see this. If you go to 1 Chronicles 2 and 1 Chronicles 4, and you read all those names, and he beget, and he beget, and he beget, and he, you know those? I love that stuff. If you read those, 1 Chronicles 2, 1 Chronicles 4, you're going to see an interesting clan of Judah that shows up. Bethlehem, Ephrat, all these names, they show up. We're talking about a clan. Notice, by the way, in this context, that this deals with Assyria coming into the land. When did that happen? Is that something we're looking forward to? I mean, I hope it doesn't happen again. We're looking at a text that describes contextually something at that time. Also notice that it mentions the land of Nimrod. Anybody want to guess what the land of Nimrod is? Like Babylon, right? You see there's a historical connection to these. Now, by the way, if we go past the white space, remember white spaces are very important when you study prophecies. The ancient scribes didn't use chapter and verses. They use white spaces to break thought, to change subjects. Listen to the way verse 6 picks up. Micah 5. And the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many peoples like dew from Jehovah, like showers upon the grass that tarries not for man, nor waits for the sons of man. The remnant of Jacob shall be among the nations in the midst of many peoples. Talking about the descendants of our family who are scattered in the nations. You're going to be in the midst of them. Now, there is a definite connection between history and prophecy. Go back to Genesis 35. Genesis 35, verse 22. And it came to pass when Israel dwelt in that land that Reuben went and lay with Bilhah, his father's concubine, and Israel heard of it. Jacob's oldest son sleeps with his concubine, right? Now, just to show that, Dave, we're going to use the board again just so I can kind of make this point. What we're told in the story, notice I put the number in the order of birth. Reuben is the firstborn. He's the firstborn son. Now I'm just going to move him just for a second. Reuben, what does it say? He goes into Bilhah. This is Rachel's handmaid. That's what the story tells us. Now, this is going to have dire consequences. This is going to change the story. Now, I'm not going to go into great detail in this class about the right of the firstborn and all that, because honestly, if you look at it, when we get into those kind of ideas, which a lot of people have studied, I have books on birthright and so forth and so on from a Torah perspective. But let me tell you something the patriarchs didn't know, and or the rules are different. This idea about the birthright and all. Some of these ideas change over time. But what we do know is that the birthright, whatever it was at this patriarchal period, would have been his. Right? It would have been his. But let's see if he gets to keep it. Now, we're also going to be talking about blessing as we work through the blessing. A lot of people associate several texts with the blessings and so forth. Like, for instance, they'll go to Genesis chapter 49. We'll come back to that day. They go to Genesis 49, and they'll talk about that. Or they'll go to Deuteronomy 33 or Judges chapter 5. Look, you can learn some incredible things that tie into the tribes. I'm not going to delve deeply into that in this class just for sake of time and my focus. But in Genesis 49, I do want to go there for a moment. Go to Genesis 49 and beginning in verse 1, because we're talking about the consequences of Reuven going into Bilhah. All right, in Genesis 49, Jacob called to his sons and said, "Gather yourselves together that I may tell you that which will befall you in the last days. Gather yourselves and hear, you sons of Jacob, and hearken to Israel your father." It doesn't say this, what's going to follow is blessings. He says, assemble yourselves together, and I'm going to tell you what will happen to you, ba'akarit hayamim, in the last days. So a simple reading would cause us to believe that what follows is somewhat prophetic, right? Now look at verse 3. Reuven, you are my firstborn. Now also I want you to notice this. In your own time, in case we don't get to it for a couple of weeks, read Genesis 49 and pay special attention who is spoken to directly and which ones are spoken about. Which tribes are addressed directly, such as Reuven. I'm going to give you one, Reuven. Reuven, you are my firstborn, my might, the beginning of my strength, the excellency of dignity and the excellency of power. Starts off good, doesn't it? Now get this. Unstable as water, you shall not excel, because you went up to your father's bed and you did defile it. He went up to my couch. I get chills when I read that. He's addressing him about all his potential. As a father, I can relate to this. Have you ever told your kids, you have so much potential, but you're not going to get there like this? And then he proclaims, the last thing he says is, he went up to my couch. Now, the reason this is so important is because this seals Reuven's fate in a way. The right of the firstborn is not going to be his. Now, I'm going to show you that, but I want to go to 1 Chronicles. I want to go to 1 Chronicles 2, first of all. 1 Chronicles 2. And I'm winding down. Someone asked me, are you going to go short tomorrow to save your voice? And the answer was yes, of course. All right, I want you to notice, first of all, 1 Chronicles 2, verse 1. These are the sons of Israel. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, Issachar, Zebulun, Dan, Yosef, Benjamin, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher. And then it begins with Judah. Now, I want you to notice the order. Dave, sorry to do this to you. Let's jump back. The chronicler gives the names, and I want you to look at my list with me. The order, it's interesting. First of all, does he follow the birth order when he names them? These are important points, in my opinion. I think it all matters. These are the sons of Israel. Go with me. Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Judah, Issachar, Zebulun. What's he doing? He's listing all of Leah's children first, but Issachar is number 9. All right, stick with me. Now, after Issachar, he says, Zebulun and Dan. Zebulun and Dan. Notice where I'm at now. I'm at Bilhah, Rachel's handmaid. Now, watch this pattern. I noticed this last night. He goes, Dan, Yosef, Benjamin, Naphtali. Now, you think, well, does that have anything to do with anything? And then Gad and Asher are listed last. Now, I want you to think, remember, when we get to here and he says, Dan is, even though it's not Rachel, these are associated with Rachel. This is the way I would do it. Like, you could draw a line and you have Leah and Rachel. That's why I did it like I did it. I wanted you to kind of see that we're talking about two groups here. All right. So what he wants to do is, though, this child, Dan, is associated with Rachel through the handmaid, because Dan, Joseph, Benjamin, Naphtali, and then Gad and Asher. Now, when we get into stories about, we read the historical accounts of which tribes are taken captive and how do we, what tribes compose the 10 versus the 1, I want you to begin to think about who's the mother. Who's the mother? These things play in. It's very important. Okay, now, go with me to 1 Chronicles chapter 5. 1 Chronicles chapter 5. and verse 1. Now the sons of Reuben, the firstborn of Israel, for he was the firstborn, but since he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Joseph, the son of Israel. But not so as to have the birthright attributed to him by genealogy. Judah prevailed over his brothers, and of him came the chief ruler, though the birthright was Joseph's. The birthright was given to the sons of Joseph. Now, how do you go from Reuven, number one, to number 11? I mean, that's a big jump. You would think you would work down the list, right? Now, a couple of things I want you to think about, and we'll clarify it next week. Dave, one more time, brother. Reuven is number one son. Dave's got several children, and he calls his number one son. That's what he's talking about. Your oldest son, your number one son. It's not like this is my favorite, you know, or whatever. At times, all of our kids could be our favorite or our least favorite. That fluctuates. All y'all probably don't think like that, but Reuven is the number one son. But because of his act of going to Bilhah, he no longer has it. Now, how do you go 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11? How do you get to number 11? Well, there are two ideas, and I want you to think. This is your homework. Would it naturally go to number 2? Or do we look for another firstborn son? Because God is also a firstborn son, as is Joseph, as is Dan. Which one? Then you say, well, would one have more weight? If you had to choose a firstborn, would it be from your wife, your woman, or from her handmaid? Is there an order there? When we talk about birthright, when we talk about the chosen, all right? So that's one. But then also, when you look at it, and we're going to get into, what we're going to see is that two of these 12 really begin to show forth a prominence. Reuven, watch this. I'll pick these up later. Reuven messes up. Shimon and Levi, they do something really bad. So bad that their father says, "You've made me odious in this land." He cannot stand what they did. And it's almost like two tribes begin to rise to the top. Two tribes have a dominance that's going to play out not only in the history, but in the prophecy. And these are those two: Judah, Joseph. All of these tribes play into the story. There is significance with every one of these. Everyone from Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Judah, Zebulun, Issachar, all of these tribes have a part to play in bringing about the ultimate redemption and fulfilling the ultimate charge and task given by God to the children of Israel. These two, you're going to see, are going to become the focus of everything that we're going to be studying. So we have to study this out very carefully. We have to study it from the words, in connection with the words, and on the basis of the words. Now, next week, I closed today with 1 Chronicles 5. that Reuven should have been the firstborn, but because of his crime, the right of the firstborn goes to the sons of Joseph. Now, my question to you is this. Who are the sons of Joseph? What we're going to talk beginning next week, I'm going to take the story of the birth and the blessing and the birthright, and I'm going to go into what I would call the Joseph saga. The Joseph saga, where we're going to look at the historical, and we're going to take the historical, the prophetic, we're going to pull them together to get a glimpse of what has been and what shall be. Don't miss next week, the Joseph saga. Shabbat Shalom.